morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. I was just explaining to Mike that he's Mike Cosentino.
That's right.
I'm Steve Williamson.
He was explaining to me how radio works.
But I think he already knew all of that.
I did. I was teasing that. One of the things along those lines that I want to talk here on Democratic Perspective this morning is disinformation. You know, this 2020 campaign coming up is going to be rampant. Disinformation is going to be stuff. So your little Google thing or your DuckDuckGo or whatever you use isn't going to be as reliable as it was. As a matter of fact, they're going to fine tune it. They're only going to be shading their disinformation now. So this morning, Steve and I wanted to talk about. We're going to talk about our upcoming shows, but we also want to talk about the Democratic field. It is just part of what we try to do here in Democratic Perspective is sort things out for folks. We want to give a simple, reasonable explanation for what has become really, really complex and chaotic times politically in America. So we try to do.
I think the thing is, Mike, the whole format that's being done, and I'm not really criticizing in a lot of way with the debates and stuff, atomizes and separates the Democratic candidates according to policies. So in the argument about Medicare for all, you lose the fact that all the Democratic candidates are for expanding health care and health care for all.
Yes.
So there's a lot of unity that's behind all the disunity and small arguments.
There's a lot of unity, correct. And I want to make sure that distinction is important that you made before the mics went on. And that was Medicare for all is different than health care for all. The Democratic candidates, the entire field, I think it's safe to say, agree on health care for all and to find ways to get it. Medicare for all does have some problems that need to be worked out, can be worked out, I think, just fine. But as far as a mantra goes, it is a little bit dangerous.
It is because most versions of Medicare for all would eliminate private insurance completely, and they would go... First, folks, I guess the thing to say is that none of the proposals you're hearing from any of the candidates on any of the parties ever passes through Congress in its original form.
Right.
Yeah, everything gets massaged and changed and modified and softened and moved this way and moved that way. It never goes through. So when you hear positions by Democratic candidates, that's telling you where they're at intellectually and politically. It's not... Don't look at those as proposals that are going to go through the Congress. It just doesn't happen. You got to be realistic. You need to have proposals to explain what you think, but you know that the proposals as such are not going to go through Congress. They have to go through two houses of the legislature, and they have to go through. It's one thing when you're a candidate, say you're Elizabeth Warren, and you and your analyst are analyzing Medicare for all. It's another thing when the whole process of Congress begins to examine the issues. And I think that's the thing to remember, folks. You need to discuss issues, but the actual proposals are going to be changing through time. What we need, though, is some sort of positive counterpart to the madness, for example, this last week with Donald Trump.
Right, the G7. That's we want to talk about G7 a little bit anyway.
Yeah.
And this isolated fool that we've sent there.
I think the thing is, Mike, that Americans, a lot of Americans have been looking for something to dux ex machina, something to drop down and eliminate Trump as a problem. They're looking for the Europeans to kick back at Trump so hard that he'll be disabled or not be able to do stuff. Not going to happen.
Yeah.
The same way the Mueller report. It didn't happen. If you really read it carefully, it's devastating for Trump. It's just absolutely, you know, I mean, they colluded with the Russians and they, tried to obstruct justice. The whole thing is all there, but it didn't hit.
Wait. Democrats take the Congress. Subpoenas everywhere. Never happened. Subpoenas went out. He ignored. Listen, we never had anybody do such violence to the Constitution. So what you say is absolutely true. Every time it's the end of August 2019, we're still looking for Trump's tax returns.
Right.
We can't. The lower district of New York still can't get Trump's tax returns out of Deutsche Bank, out of anything. Every month since November 2016, I thought Trump's tax returns were going to come. Nobody's going to. It's 3 years later almost, and we still can't.
I think the thing is, Mike, I think you're exactly right. This is a really good point. The thing is that we thought that these subpoenas would have impact, and he's just ignoring them. By the time the legal stuff is done, he may be out of office already. Then there's another option when he's out of office, because then he should be prosecuted. But the thing is that none of the stuff that we hoped would solve the problem of the American people understanding what Donald Trump is, what the Republican Party is, and getting rid of them in power has happened.
That's right.
We're going to have to do it. The Democratic candidates are going to have to run against the most unscrupulous, dishonest, and very talented demagogue to ever run the United States. We're going to see a really, really, really dirty campaign. Mike's talking about social media. They're spending billions of dollars trying to clean up social media but
to minimize that impact of disinformation I was talking about. It's still going to be out there, and it's going to be, because it's going to be sponsored. As long as it's paid for, through the various websites, various right-wing websites, it's going to be out there, and you're going to be able to find it.
There's so many phony groups and stuff, Mike, advertising and promoting different ideas that, it's just sort of astonishing. So that's not, I think it'll be better maybe than when we just let the Russians run all over our election, but I don't think it's going to be solved. I think you're right. I think it's just, it's a matter of doing the best we can with this. You have to get ready for a campaign. The one reason I think we should focus on what the policies are and what the character of the Democratic candidates are is an antidote to this craziness that's going to happen.
That is an antidote to the chaos Dan Rather did a good meme the other day talking about, don't let anybody tell you that this wasn't expected, that this denial of law, that this chaos, that this, this humiliation wasn't coming. People who knew Donald Trump, people who didn't know Donald Trump, would just look at his record, knew this was coming. So here we are. And so Democratic perspective, Steve Williamson in his calmness is trying to say, well, let's look at all this really Democratic stuff that the Democratic candidates, look at this normal liberal democracy stuff that the Democratic candidates are talking about. They're talking about all these policies and issues that are really uplifting compared to trade wars, compared to the madman, the mad king, compared to whether Trump is sane or not. I do want to mention one, and we're going to get to that, but I want to mention one thing. I've been saying that nothing compares to this. This isn't the rock and roll song. So looking at history, looking at past elections, it's all different. We have, there's, the term unprecedented has been so overused. I've said that on this mic before, but it doesn't even apply. So we're talking all new rules here. But the election of 1800, when one political candidate gave in, The Electoral College was tied. So what happens then, because we don't use popular vote, the Electoral College was tied, it goes to the House of Representatives. The House of Representatives in 1800 voted 35 times and was tied. Couldn't kick. So the other candidate, Jefferson's opponent, just conceded. He just conceded and walked away to show that the democracy could work. that the system that the founding fathers had set up would work. So what are the chances of Trump walking away? Now, I believe he's complaining to the G7 about how mean Americans are to him, how much we don't like him. And it's not as if it was a beauty contest.
And apparently they're being as careful as they can, tiptoeing around, disagreeing with him, but trying not to set him off. My warning to folks is this, is that politicians always have private polling, and it usually runs a couple of weeks ahead of the public polling. The public polling is very bad for Trump. His private polling is probably even worse.
Right.
He's getting really, really bad news. They promised him that he will win the election because the economy is good.
Right.
And they buttered him up with this stuff. The economy is good. You're going to win despite everything. And now the economy is shaky thanks to his trade policies.
Right.
So he is becoming more and more unstable. And as he sees himself losing, we may have a man who gets more and more unstable and more radical in what he's doing. For example, ordering American companies to leave China.
Right.
It's not anything the American president can do. Any American president is not anything they should be involved with. I mean, if you believe in capitalism, you really shouldn't have the government where they tell everybody, all right. So he's going to be more unstable. But he has tremendous amount of resources. So just to warn you, we're going to have a really rough campaign, Mike. We're going to have all the demagoguery and all the sleight of hand and all the phony this and that. And we're going to have a man who's unstable. Now, at the G7, they kind of catered to him and calmed him down.
That's true.
Good Lord, that we have to spend all this time trying to cater and calm down the President of the United States so he doesn't do anything super crazy. I mean, what is that? I mean, we didn't have that with Reagan. We didn't have it with Nixon even, you know. Certainly not with Bush 1 and Bush 2, they had the right wing and had pretty much had him managed the whole time, so he didn't do anything out of character. This is going to get really extreme. And so one antidote for that is to look at the Democratic candidates, who they are.
Yeah.
We have a bunch of ethical candidates, a bunch of people who are not demagogues. We have a bunch of people who are trying to come up with policies and positions that work for the American people. And they're trying to deal, Mike, with one of the most important issues in the United States, which is extending health care for everybody.
Right.
Right. I mean, this is fundamental. And I'll tell you, we can't afford it, blah, blah, blah. But every other modern democracy has health care for everybody. I mean, everybody has a system. And whether you're kind of a capitalist, private enterprise based system like Switzerland, or you have complete socialized medicine like England, all these systems work better than our system does.
Every one of them. If you have diabetes, we can go on. Medicine and healthcare, and Americans are suffering and dying. It's that simple. And Americans apparently are okay with that. But I shouldn't say that. The majority of Americans want healthcare.
Do you think they believe that things can change, or do they think they just think nothing's going to change?
Well, I think they've been fed a lot of crap over the years about certain public assistance healthcare, and so I think the American style healthcare, I think if we get to have it, if we get to have healthcare for all, soon, I think what the Americans come up with will be a model for the world. And yes, I think if you are preparing for a career in insurance, chances are maybe you want to study something else and prepare for another kind of job. I think private insurance as although
medical insurance,
insurance is not going to be necessarily industry.
Because even, you know, with Medicare now, you have Medicare Plus planned.
Yep.
So there's a minor, important and profitable
important,
role
absolutely.
For insurance companies, even with Medicare, for everyone. I think Democrats are going to have to decide, you know, how to approach these things.
I'm going to read the list, and you're going to tell me who's in and who's. So Joe Biden, of course, as whatever he is, he's leading. He beats Trump hands down. Elizabeth Warren is a juggernaut right now, as much as anything is. In Kamala Harris, strong, still in there. In fact, if you Google Democratic candidates, the pictures that come up are Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, and Elizabeth Warren. So moving on, we got Bernie Sanders, of course, Pete Buttigieg, Cory Booker. I liked when they asked Cory Booker, when Rolling Stone asked Cory Booker, why is he in the race? They said, well, we really don't know why he wants to be president. Beto O'Rourke, Jay Inslee is
out. And I think that he did a great thing in making climate change front and center.
Yes.
But I think he did the right thing in leaving office. What you're doing when you do see these candidates is you're seeing if the Democrats win potential cabinet appointees and
right.
ambassadors
yeah,
and
we'll
all,
see
all
these
the
names
rest
again.
Of it. Yeah.
We'll see these names
so
again.
You have someone like, you know, Inslee, and you look at him and you think, well, he would make a good Secretary of the Interior.
I'm not even halfway through the list.
Yeah, go ahead.
Tulsi Gabbard.
I'm going to take a nap while you finish this.
Okay, Tulsi Gabbard, Kirsten Gillibrand, if it comes to the number of emails I get, there was one gentleman on some show, maybe on MSNBC, that sent money to all the candidates to see what kind of emails he generated. It generated in 24 hours. It generated 13 from Kirsten. And from as little as three, he said he just sent $10 to every candidate just to see what would happen, because the emails are relentless.
She is someone that people thought would be doing much, much better, and she hasn't been. She's kind of stayed down on the bottom. A lot of people thought she was a major candidate at the beginning of this and that she would be rising to the top. Other people thought Bernie was going to have much better stats than Elizabeth Warren, and it's beginning to kind of reverse itself.
Andrew Yang, Bill de Blasio, Marianne Williamson, Steve Bullock, John Delaney, Michael Bennett. Is he still in? As far as you know.
I think he's out, but I'm not sure. It's hard to keep track of all 20-something of them.
John Hickenlooper is out. That
yes,
much we
he's
know.
Out.
And we're
yeah.
celebrating that because that's our...
We didn't even know
that's
sort of
our
who he was.
Well, that's our Senate seat in Colorado.
Yeah.
Tim Ryan, Seth Moulton, Wayne Messam.
Those guys are gone.
Those guys are gone. Okay.
All right. Now, the thing is that you need to think about and listen to the candidates and stuff, because it is going to be a real choice. And I don't know. My pattern is this. Democrats have to decide whether the most important thing is to defeat Trump and get him out of office, because he's a danger to the United States, particularly if he's in there four more years. And he's a danger now. I mean, what if he tried to order all our American companies out of China? He can't do it literally, but he could put in so many roadblocks, they would not be able to do business with China. He's destabilized the whole international trading system. So he's an extremely dangerous guy. So you have to decide whether the prime thing is to get rid of Trump. And then how you do it. Do you have a progressive candidate? Because I think both Mike and I agree there has to be fundamental changes now in the United States, right, Mike?
One of the interesting, yes, I agree, Steve. One of the things I saw was kind of how fast do you want to change? Electing a Biden or even a Warren would bring that change about a little slower. But the progressives claim that if you pick one of them, that they will bring all of these unregistered, all of these non-active voters.
That's the argument, Mike.
Yes,
yeah.
Right. And I don't believe that's true. I don't believe that's true. So I think.
And then the more conservative point of view is look, there's less than 100,000 votes in significant states like
that's right.
Pennsylvania that separate Hillary losing from winning. And if Biden can pick up these votes in these significant states, he can defeat Trump.
Right? Well, here's the
now.
Go ahead.
So that's there's two logic. One, let's bring out new voters, bring out people who are disenchanted, and God knows there's a ton of them out there.
That's right.
That's one point. A progressive, a strong progressive will bring those people out. The
and
other
poll
one
after
is,
poll,
let's defeat Trump and make sure that we defeat him.
Poll after poll said the non-voters elected Trump. The people that didn't vote elected Trump by not showing up to the polls. So here's a scenario I liked the other day. Biden and Warren unify the party. You got Warren is really quite progressive. Biden is who he is. They unify and become this. Biden serves one term. He toddles off to Delaware to sit and look at the ocean. And Biden serves the second term and then really moves the country in the progressive
Warren
direction.
Warren serves the second term. That seems ideal.
Yes,
that
I'm
seems
sorry.
Ideal, Mike.
Biden
it's my fantasy. You know, if we have to have Biden,
having Trump
a Biden-Warren ticket. Yeah.
Biden-Warren ticket. Trump is a fantasy. He was supposed to blow it all up, and he did. He's done the job that he was elected for. It's time for him to move on.
Yeah. I've got to say that.
Let's talk about some of the issues for the Democratic candidate. Healthcare we sort of talked about, and these are the things you want to, because there's so many of them. You know, our show could be 450 minutes long instead of 45 minutes long, and people would stop. But it is everybody's got a favorite, and everybody kind of focuses on that. But those of us in the political world think, okay, yeah, fine. Look at your favorite. And then look at your favorite among the possible winners. So that's the scenario that we're advising on Democratic perspective. Look at your favorite, if it's Pete Buttigieg and all of these other ones, and then look at the one that are leading in the polls, or at least have a chance.
This is not the time to support a protest candidate
there
who has no chance to win.
So find their position on climate change. Huge, huge thing coming up September 20th. International strike sponsored by, or at least using the Greta, young 12-year-old from Europe as the kind of poster child of that awareness. Her quote, if you think that we're behaving like your house is on fire, it's because it is. That everything else pales. What did Obama say? We're the first generation that is feeling the effects of climate change, and we're the last generation that can do something about it. What a brilliant statement.
The thing is that climate change is the issue that affects everybody, but only actually some small countries first. It's an issue that the whole world has to work on. It's an issue that affects everybody, and it's almost invisibly happening. We're seeing all kinds of. If you read the news, you know the glaciers on Greenland, which the president recently tried to buy from Denmark. Only they don't own Greenland. But
the other thing that Democrats,
ignorance is hard to overestimate.
Yeah, that's true. Right up until the last minute, those guys they'll be on the stock market floor, knee deep in water, waist deep in water, and they'll still be trying to trade
because it's profitable. Look, if you're producing oil and gas and coal, you don't want people to know that you can't keep burning fossil fuels indefinitely in the future, because that will hurt your business. And so you have the Koch brothers.
Should we mention the death of David Koch?
Yeah. One of the leading Koch brothers has died.
Yeah.
But when we talk about the Koch brothers, I think in some ways it's misleading, Mike, because it's not two guys. It is and it isn't.
It isn't.
But it's an entire huge network of organizations that are heavily funded, not only by the Koch, but sort of secretly by a whole lot of other people.
So if you see nothing changes at the death of David Koch, that's why.
That's why, yeah. Yeah, the machinery is all in place now for them to go ahead.
Well, we do want to mention, since we did bring it up, that David Koch, if you watch PBS, you see he sponsors science shows. He's done a lot of things toward the end of his life to try to make up for, as far as I'm concerned, for all the harm he did. He was trying to buy a seat in heaven. This is like Jack Nicholson being buried in the chock full of nuts you know, that heavenly coffee can. I mean, he was trying to get in, maybe a little
too, I'm not following
that,
Michael.
Metaphor. Okay. But the idea is that David Koch did more harm than good in his life. And that's all.
You know, the whole pattern of the oligarchs giving tons of money to cultural institutions has been going on since ancient times.
Yes,
I mean, that's how they build prestige. You think he's just sort of a bastard or whatever. You don't like his politics. And then he gives a whole bunch of money to the Metropolitan Opera. And so then his name gets on something. You notice that he doesn't give money to anything that visibly cultural, that he doesn't get his name put on. Metropolitan Coke fountain, you know, and so forth and so on.
Or women's health centers or women's sanctuary centers or Planned Parenthood. Right?
The oligarchs are always trying to adjust themselves. Look, they're justify themselves. Look, they're skimming off almost all the profits, almost all the money in the United States that's not going down to ordinary folks. And the central problem is that people's wages have been stagnant. The amount of money going to the 1% has been going up and up. And that's dangerous for democracy.
That's the other thing that you only have Democratic candidates talking about, folks. And it's a big, big deal. And that's the wealth inequality. If you go to all of their pages, which you should, by the way, go to your favorites page, then go to the leaders pages and look at how they react to wealth inequality, as even right-wing people are recognizing the danger to, billionaires are recognizing the danger to our way of government, our way of life with such huge. I saw a wonderful quote the other day that American business has taken second, third, and fourth harvests on Americans and an American business.
What does that mean, Mike?
That means that they've
new to me.
Where they've come back with business practices time and time again by not spreading the wealth, by not giving raises, by taking away pensions, by taking away health care. They've beefed up their bottom line. So when you have somebody like the Amazon guy making, you know, $80 billion every time you have people like the Walton family, because they've come back. There is no sharing of the wealth. There is no mechanism to bring that money back into the public sphere.
Well, they've also sort of convinced everybody that the only people that are important are the owners of things.
Right.
They're responsible for all of this stuff. And they, you know, and that's not clear that it's not the workers who contributed. Look at the wealth of slavery before the Civil War. At that point, Southern plantation owners had more wealth than anybody in the Northern United States. Industrialization had not really happened yet, which built these huge wealth in the Northwest. All the money was concentrated in slavery. So did they do a great job raising cotton? They did a great job raising cotton based on slavery. The reason that it worked is that they didn't have to pay anybody and they could beat their slaves to get them to work. In fact, they did all kinds of apparently really tricky stuff. So who's really responsible for creation of the wealth of the United States? Just the planter, or is it the planter and the guys who did all the work?
The other absurdity here, I mean, this is the other inhumanity. This goes on and on. You know, we Americans have glossed over their slavery. Oh, okay, we have slavery. So, but that source of wealth, that human, talk about human capital, they had children and they too were, you owned them and you could sell them and trade them. It becomes this massive source of wealth that exacerbates inequality at a rate that you can't even keep track of. So you want to look at your Democratic candidates' positions. You want to look at their position on wealth inequality. You want to look at their position on public education. You want to see what they have to say about rural America. This show is coming from rural America. You want to see what they say about free college. I keep seeing these things about Tennessee, of all places, and free college. You want, if guns are your problem, I posted a thing that I was out at a local shooting range the other day. I saw two shooting groups in $70,000 pickup trucks, sighting in AK-47, and sighting in sniper rifles. Now don't get me wrong, this is legal in America. I have to admit, I pulled in and I quietly left, and let them have the range, and they were doing, I mean, we're talking extreme safe. They had radios, they had tents, they had the whole bit. But this is an informal range. This wasn't, the place out on 260 that you pay a fee to get into. And when I see memes on the radio, directed at me, by the way, memes on social media directed at me, that say, yeah, we're talking about what to do about the liberals down at the range. Is this a veiled threat or what? If it was a veiled threat, it certainly got through. So the point is, I've gone off on a little tangent here, but you want to look at your Democratic candidate's position on guns and what it is. 70% of Americans want extended background checks. I mean, it's another case, yet another case of the Republican leadership of the nation not reflecting what the people, how the people feel. Immigration, find out what your candidate, there's some really cool things to do with immigration, to have legal workers. The United States must have immigration reform in order to survive. Check, put that on your pipe and smoke it.
Instead
we
of peace
must
deal,
have
we need a comprehensive solution to the immigration issues. We need a border, yes, we need a border, but we need a humane way of dealing with it. This is all. This is stuff is not impossible to do.
We
have a doggy in the studio here.
One of the best days of our
We like doggies.
Of our, yeah, exactly. You can't not like them.
But they don't speak well on the radio, Mike.
Exactly. Criminal justice reform. Packing the Supreme Court, abolishing the Electoral College. We are living, legal marijuana. These are all things that you will love the Democratic. This is how you move a country forward. These issues have simmered for so long, and the Democrats have taken them up and want to talk about them and want to move these things forward. And that's the beauty of the Democrats rather than the Republicans and the Donald Trumps. They want the status quo because they're making crap loads of money.
The system has to work for almost everybody. It's never going to work for everybody. You're going to always have people who can't function well, and you have to treat them with compassion. But pretty much, you need a system that's designed for the majority of people, and for the majority of people who are contributing to the country. And you need to bring people in. You need to be inclusive rather than exclusive. You need to have humane policies. If you want to have a really strong border, fine. But it has to be done humanely. You can't be putting kids in cages.
You don't put kids in cages. You don't want to be internationally known as the country that put kids in cages. American Jews, I can't believe they're not rising up en masse and calling this out. I do want to say that in talking about the Democratic positions of the field, as it thins out, if you want a single source, Rolling Stone is an excellent single source to find out about candidates. If you say, and the closer it gets to the election, and I get it, it's August, a year before the election, but it's getting closer all the time, and the need is huge. So educate yourselves rather than you can go a lot, you can go anywhere you want. But there's lots of a single source. Rolling Stone is a great single source for all the candidates, and they continue to update. Now, clear out some time in your schedule because there are so many candidates. If you just want to investigate three or four, then do that.
Yeah, that probably makes sense for most people. I like the fact they're debating, but debating is a little bit misleading because, like I say, it separates everybody out. It shows up the differences, and the way the press asks the questions does that too. That's their job, the difference between candidate A and B. But step back and look at the larger picture of how much agreement there is, Mike, as well as disagreement.
And that's exactly what they have to do. Could you imagine the candidate says no to a debate? No to a debate because it's a waste of time. Mike Cosentino would say that. He'd say, screw the debate. This, you know, we're all
only if he was ahead in the election. If he was behind in the election, he might say yes. Let's debate over and over again.
We're all inches from each other, and the only thing that matters here is the guy that they're writing huge papers on the crisis in democracy. And known as Donald Trump. And the crisis in democracy is real. The democratic institutions that Donald Trump and his henchmen have destroyed are, I don't know what's going to happen in the next 15 months. There's going to be so little of the USA left.
If he wins and has 4 years, it's going to be a disaster. I think as his polling and his people are privately telling him, I'm sure it's difficult to tell Donald Trump anything he doesn't want to hear. That's clear from the press and the people who work for him. But the more he begins to think he's going to lose, I don't know whether he'll go into some fantasy that somehow he's going to pull it out, or will he become what we see now, more and more erratic and over the top and more shooting from the hip. I mean, he's not just some guy who's out there tweeting. He's not Mike. He's not the guy at the end of the bar who's pontificating about stuff. He's president of the United States.
That's me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're up on stuff. What's going to happen? We're running out of time, but we still have some time. What's going to happen at G7 today? What stupid thing, what embarrassing thing, what humiliating thing is he going to do today at the G7?
What they've done at the G7 apparently is just tried to calm him down.
Yes.
And try to, I mean, they're diplomats. You got to remember that if you say, you know, we're going to invade your country, the diplomat's going to say to you, well, I think you consider a lot of different things before you invade.
So whose choice?
It's the way they work. It's their job is to soften, explain everything. So if your countries don't get along, if diplomats don't work it out, it's because, you know, it ain't workable out of
one of the things I want to say in our last 10 minutes is that the shows like Democratic Perspective, and as far as I'm concerned, Rachel Maddow and Wolf Blitzer, what we don't know is we live in a country that is no longer transparent. The stuff that we don't know, so we sit around here with microphones, they sit around with microphones and cameras, and makes all sorts of predictions, and knowing that the lack of transparency, and especially in this government, is such that we're making comments on stuff that we really don't know everything about. Trump's success has to be in part Trump's power from those lawyers that keep him there, that have found ways.
It's the shadow side.
It's the shadow.
Everybody, you know, and there are a whole bunch of people all over the world working with the shadow.
Yeah.
With the xenophobia, with racism.
That's my conspiracy
with
theory.
Anti-Semitism, with any Islamism. There's always power on the shadow side of human life. Remember that we love our country and we extol its virtues and blah, blah, blah. And we go on and on and on. But it was built on slavery and genocide. We have to begin to be a little bit more honest about what we did. I'm not saying everybody should walk around and feel guilty all the time. I'm not saying the United States has not achieved great things. But we have to be realistic about the shadow side of the American experience.
And if that bothers you, which it should, then look up where your candidate stands on reparations. Obviously down at the garage, reparations is not a major topic of discussion.
I think reparations is an interesting idea, but it will absolutely. See, the folks I worked with, the conservatives already believe that particularly African Americans have already been advantaged by, the changes that occurred during Lyndon Johnson they've already been given
preference. They're allowed to vote?
Well, they're
that's
given
the changes
preference
that
in job hiring. They're doing this. They're among the right. There's already a strong feeling that everything has been redressed. Obviously it hasn't been, but their feeling is it's already, and you'll hear this, that white people have been disadvantaged and,
yes,
so
that's right.
it's an intense feeling, and reparations is about the best thing you could do to really set them off. Although you know, they're going to be set off anyway. So I think we need to have a full debate of issues like that.
Those polls are amazing. That one of the reasons we have the polarization that we do, the divisions that we do, is that white Republicans feel like victims.
They do. They have convinced themselves they're a victim. And to be honest, folks, change, particularly visible change, always feels a little bit like death. The old America of the 1950s is no more. It just isn't. You can go to California, and when I went to the University of California, it was all white people. Let's be honest. There were a few Asians, a few Hispanics, but it was all Anglos.
Yeah.
Now that's changed. It's probably, I don't know if a majority Asian, but it's so all of these changes, particularly if they're visible, if the people look different or talk different, feel a little bit like death, like you're losing something. And a whole lot of people want to hold on to it instead of moving into the world. I think one thing I like about Beto O'Rourke is he, you know, truth is Hispanic and Anglo people get along really well. I mean, I don't know what it is, but there's a compatibility there. And I think that, you know, his example of El Paso is a good one. So there is a feeling that change is like death and like you're losing something and there's no positive thing. So I heard guys say, well, you know, my wages went down when women started being treated equally with wages. When women got the same wages we did, our wages went down. And I said to them, well, you know, what about your girlfriend or your wife? Now she's making a decent living. It's change. And I don't know, Mike, I think that, it's like water rising and falling. You have to move with it. It's best if you move with it. Now, look, folks, we don't care if you're a crusty old guy and you're sitting around like, I hate change. I wish it was 1959. Okay, that's fine. We don't care. We still like you. But, you know, for the majority of people, you've got to begin to shift with the shifts.
We're going
to
call that a segue into other shows here. Some shows we got coming up. We got Jay Ruby and Prescott Indivisible coming up, talk about some equality things and talk about some Northern Arizona activism. We got Mark Kelly coming to Northern Arizona and several events. We got, Mark Kelly's going to be in Cottonwood on Wednesday. Today's Monday. It's going to be a packed event.
Monday all day.
Monday all day, but on Wednesday, Mark Kelly will be in Cottonwood. I hesitate to mention it. I don't want to say you're not invited, but he'll be at the Ledbetter Law Firm. There's going to be lots and lots and lots of folks there. It's an invitation event, so I'm a little worried about this one, guys. I'm not very good at being an elitist, so if you told Mike Cosentino, you told the wrong guy if you expected him to keep it a secret. Mark Kelly will be at Cottonwood on Wednesday, but he will also be at a much bigger venue the month later, September 21st in Prescott.
So, Mike, I'll be leaving for 3 weeks, folks. And Mike's got, a really good lineup of shows for the next 3 weeks. And we have some interesting shows after that.
We got Randy Garrison. You can beat up Randy Garrison on September 9th. Or you can say nice things about him. It depends on what circles you are. Randy Garrison is a district supervisor for Yavapai County. County supervisor for District 3. Lots and lots of local stuff going on. Lots of local development. You don't need an architectural degree to find out what's going on. Don't forget, folks, Democratic Perspective is here every Monday at 8:15 because you help us pay for it. We have some folks to help keep us on the air, but we need all the help we can get. Go to vvid.org, Verde Valley Independent Democrats.org, and hit the listen to some of our old shows. Lots and lots of good information there. Find out where we are. vvid.org. Listen to our shows. Give us some dough.
We got great shows coming up. Mike's got them all lined up.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.